Well, that's called People Make the World Go Round, the famous tune by the Stylistics, interpreted by the Green Project. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I'm juggling here with some technical issues. I really wish I had the gift for it, but I really have to learn how to handle technological mishaps when they occur, as they are occurring at this moment. But let's talk about a couple of things. I'm waiting for my computer to cooperate here with me. And in the meantime, we can continue the chat. What I wanted to talk about today is this. We have, as you know, a new member of Congress, and we have an old member of the U.S. Senate. When I say old, I didn't mean to refer to his age. I'm talking about Bernie Sanders. What would happen if, or do you think, that there's a possibility that the Democratic Party would recognize a natural kind of marriage here, even though the two people that I'm talking about, Bernie Sanders and Ocasio of the Bronx, I'm trying to just get my computer to behave here. And it's not at all. And it's all my notes and everything are right there, and I just can't get to them. It's very disconcerting. But I'm sure somebody somewhere will take pity on me one day and say, look, let's put you through the paces on how to get your stuff going. All right, so I'm referring to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, an avowed Democratic socialist who pulled off one of the greatest political upsets last month, as you recall, when the 28-year-old trounced 10-term congressman and party powerhouse Joe Crowley in his bid for re-election to his heretofore safe 14th district seat in New York. Bernie Sanders, the U.S. senator from Vermont, said to be thinking of another run for president in 2020, still identifies himself as an independent, although he caucuses with congressional Democrats and closely identifies with the with democratic socialism. Now, we'll get into a discussion of what that is. So we have Ocasio-Cortez, a new generation leader, but she faces a not-so-friendly welcome from establishment Democrats, especially since Crowley was in line for leadership of the party. Sanders, still blamed by the party, Biggs, for stealing votes from the then-presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, has not endeared himself to them with rumors of another run. Could, this is a question, could Ocasio-Cortez's stunning victory and Sanders's appeal to disaffected Democrats create new political possibilities? Is there a chance that that could happen? And if so, what does that mean on two grounds? How do or how will Democrats, if they go with the idea of forging a new path, a new possibility for the party, will they how will they deal with this notion of democratic socialism? How will they deal with these two candidates who, no matter what people say, they present an extraordinary opportunity to fortify the party in new political turf, bringing new people in if they embrace that idea? Or will they continue to just reject new possibilities? Will they continue to sideline people on the basis, even though they bring quite a bit to the party, potentially anyway, will they continue to sideline both Ocasio or Cortez and Sanders on the basis that they are democratic socialists? And now what does that mean for the public? Can and will the public continue to embrace the political leanings that are not establishment political thought by these two new people? It's a kind of complicated question, but it's a very, very important question for us to deal with, I think, simply because, well, the situation is here. And how and where do the Democrats, the establishment Democrats, see an opportunity here to expand the party, or do they go with the old attitude that, because we've seen that the Democratic Party has already taken the position as regards Bernie Sanders, that to benefit from the Democratic Party and its perks, you have to be an avowed Democrat. So what is that leading up to? From your perspective, what do you see that leading up to? 888-874-4888. Let's explore that question, because inevitably we will have to face it. And we'll be watching how the Democrats deal with the question. 888-874-4888. Who's going to be stunning victory? Everybody was stunned by it, didn't see it coming, but she soundly trounced Joe Crowley. She says she's a democratic socialist. And as she goes into Congress, the question is, isn't it natural for her to align herself more so with the Democrats than with anybody else? You have Bernie Sanders, who has repeatedly declared himself an independent, but he also has been publicly friendly toward this concept of democratic socialism, and he has aligned himself. He has a history of caucusing, as he says, with the Democratic Party. Okay. So it seems as if two very significant people are available to the Democratic Party, or might be available to the Democratic Party, and might have a greater affinity to the Democratic Party than any other party in Congress. What do you do with them? And what do they do with the party? How do they reconcile a political opportunity here that exists? How are they going to deal with it? The Democratic Party has sent out a signal saying, and this is specifically targeting Bernie Sanders, no more riding on the coattails of the Democratic Party if you're thinking of running for some office or the other, and it is rumored that he's thinking of running for president again. But no more running or riding the crest of the Democratic Party waves unless you
specifically commit that you are a Democrat? Is he likely to do that? We don't know. Are they likely to stretch out a hand to the new Democrat, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? How will they deal with this question on two levels? One, we have these folks achieving extraordinary results, but outside of the Democratic Party. And two, they are publicly identifying, at least, as democratic socialists. What's going to be the likely scenario here? Bruce from New York, you're on the air.
Hello, you, Trish.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And you?
Oh, I'm flustered. I can't get my technical things to work the way I want them to work, but that's been a long history with me.
But yeah, okay. I'm sorry to hear that.
How do you deal with this question?
Well, I want to say a few things. I mean, last week I was trying to call you relative to the winning of the Ocasio winning here in New York. I think people are overestimating, to put it mildly, the significance of this event. I mean, we have had people like this in the past. I mean, how many times have you reported on people on these situations? I mean, right here in New York, in Harlem, we had a man who was more, even more leftist. I'm talking about, what's his name again in Harlem? Or what's his name? Paul?
Adam Clayton Powell?
Adam Clayton Powell, yeah. I mean, he was a progressive in his time too, and maybe way ahead of his peers, but he doesn't get anywhere. I mean, the system is not, it does not permit that type of change. I mean, you know, you can't change the system from the center. I mean, it allows you to think that you can do this at the periphery. But the center, nothing changes. I mean, it goes on like Old Man River. I mean, what's going to happen to Cortez when she gets to Washington is that she's going to be confronted with something they call the Platonic two-step, right? I mean, basically, it's going to be, she's got, everywhere she goes, she's going to face pressure to go to the center, to accept traditional democratic values, yeah? And as far as working outside the party apparatus is concerned, I mean, there's no space in a duopoly for this. I mean, what the duopoly does is that you have two parties, and you have to sometimes, you know, one party is unseated, right? And when you expect this new party to take the country in a different direction, what two parties do, they just close ranks and business continues as usual. I mean, we've had this in this country for a long time. We never always had Democrats and Republicans. There were other parties that formed the duopoly. But you cannot change a duopoly on the fringes like this. I mean, nothing's going to happen. Cortez is going to, like I said before, is you know, I'm surprised that people are so excited about this. I mean, this thing happens over and over again. I mean, there was a time, for instance, when we had in Chicago, we had this black guy, what's his name again? I can't remember. You talk about him sometimes from time to time.
Oh, Harold Washington?
I mean, Harold Washington, you know, we had a whole ethos, you know, of Washington, you know, that gave birth to Jackson, and then we had somebody in Washington, D.C., the mayor, I can't remember his name again. But
Marion
we've
Barry.
Gone through, precisely, we've gone through this before. I mean, and as far as I'm concerned, people like Barry and Washington could not make the type of changes that we are now looking for Cortez to make. I mean, you know, I can't say
I wouldn't agree with you that we're looking for Cortez to make a difference and to carve a different path. But I'm looking at us seeing what the scenario is. And you already said that you think the party will close ranks and continue business as usual, essentially shutting her out in the cold. But I don't suspect that they would be that careless and that, frankly, that stupid to do something like that, because she did achieve a stunning victory. She beat their guy soundly. And she does walk in the door with some political credentials as a result of that. Nobody saw this political victory coming. Nobody. All right, so that's on her part. They already sent a signal to Sanders by telling him, or just issuing an edict, that you can't be fish and fowl at the same time. You have to be a Democrat. You have to swear allegiance to the Democratic Party to benefit in any way from the political gifts of the Democratic Party, meaning political support and so forth. So we have already a scenario in which, at least by definition, we have two people who, although they have achieved significant political victories outside of the Democratic Party, are not of the Democratic Party, but of what use could they be to the Democratic Party and the party being of use to them? Do you expect any kind of rapprochement, as they say, to happen, especially as the political season, we enter the political season for 2020?
No, I don't believe so. And at the same time, we have to consider Trump. I mean, Trump is the elephant in the room, as it were. Trump won outside the Republican Party. And a lot of what he is doing is the destruction of the Republican Party itself, and maybe the Democrats, the duopoly itself, you know. He doesn't come from them. So I don't see how the party leaders, the party fathers in the Democratic Party could have such a strong hand to dictate to Cortez or to Bernie Sanders that they cannot have this particular political leaning. It went from himself. I mean, you know, I mean, when, as far as I'm concerned, for the Democratic Party to keep these two people in the fold, there may very well be a flank that could make contact with somebody like Trump, who is not obeying Republican orthodoxy.
Well, you threw in there a nice surprise element, and it's really no surprise. The question on the Republican side is, what do they do with Trump? Whether they like him or not, he is a major factor for the Republicans. But, you know, I'm fascinated by how the party, the Democratic Party in particular, we see how the Republican Party is confronted with the reality of Donald Trump being a massive political force for the party. What will be the reaction, and how will the Democrats, who really could use a boost, how will the Democrats deal with the Ocasio-Cortez / Sanders phenomenon? And that is a fascinating thing to me.
Right, but what adds to the weakness, you trace, of the Democratic Party is that they were not fair to Bernie Sanders last time. You know, I can't understand how they could feel as though they have this strong hand in dealing with Bernie Sanders or Cortez or whoever else, you know. Last time, I mean, this party should not be, this should be an existential crisis for this party. This party was caught red-handed, right, trying to sway an election to favor one particular candidate. I mean, and grossly so, right? And even the lady from Florida who was involved and who was the thing. I mean, I'm still hearing people calling her name and people on TV going to her for expert opinion. This woman was involved, you know, in the most grotesque. I mean, this, to my mind, is close to treason, right? For the Democratic Party to have done what they did last time to Bernie Sanders. And now expect to I mean, these people cannot be feisty enough to come back and suggest to him now, I mean, we unfaired you last time, but now we are going to ask you for something you know what I mean, this time. I mean, what kind of madness could this
be? This is politics. This is politics. You're talking from a point of view of logic, and you know, you're looking at the history and you prognosticating as to how people, given the history that we know, how will the party behave? But this is politics. And they have a greater investment, I would think, than before in winning this time. So they may be likely to do things that we don't expect them to do, such as to sharpen up an alliance that they had with Sanders, or Sanders had with the party, that, of course, was broken. But then they made it clear recently by issuing this edict that nobody benefits. This is clearly pointed at Sanders. Nobody is to benefit from affiliation with the Democratic Party unless that person is a Democrat, a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, which he is not. So,
well,
with this dynamic, we try to figure out what would the likely scenario be. I think it's fascinating, don't you?
Well, yes, I do. But remember last time, the Democratic Party also felt as though they owed Hillary something. They owed her political capital because she didn't get to run when Obama won in 2007, 2008, you know. And there was a sense within the party that they owed her something. I think it's more clear now that they owe Sanders something, you know. And you know, I'm surprised that they would want to proffer a scenario where he comes into alignment in the way that is being suggested. I'm surprised at that. And I think the history of politics...
We haven't explored. You haven't talked about the Sanders Ocasio-Cortez alliance. Would it prove to be anything?
Well,
and if so,
how
could it possibly be used as a hedge or a wedge against the Democratic Party?
But even, you know, we have uncovered before, prior, I mean, that Sanders was not really true to his word. I mean, Sanders has some failings. I mean, I'm not sure that just by identifying somebody as a Democratic Socialist or the likes means a lot. I mean, when you look at Sanders' record, Sanders has no problem with selling arms to the Saudis, for instance, or killing innocent people in Yemen. He came out against it recently, but at the time of running, he had no difficulty with this. As far as Israel is concerned, you know, he is fairly soft on that as well. You know, I'm not sure that these names, you know, mean too much. You know, I'm not satisfied that Cortez is committed to getting rid of ICE or anything like that. You know, right now I just see them as political things for campaigning. You know, but I don't think there's any deep commitment to the ideals that are being exposed.
Okay. Well, thank you for a very considerable chunk of information to digest. Thanks, Bruce. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
What do you think
the scenario proves here, or what does it present here in terms of how politics works? You have somebody who just smackdown, a big smackdown of this so-called leader, 10-term congressman, who was in line for leadership of the Democratic Party, who says she is a Democratic Socialist. She has not indicated an affinity to the Democratic Party at all. You have Bernie, who did work he caucused with the Democratic Party before. He, in fact, we criticized him here for essentially betraying what we thought was a straight and narrow path as an independent. And most recently was the reason for the Democratic Party issuing its new rule that you can't run as a Democrat in any way unless you, in fact, are a Democrat, which he has not yet declared him. And he insists still that he's independent. But he also says that he has democratic socialist leanings. How is a Democratic Party going to deal with these two individuals who supposedly have so much in common themselves? As a matter of fact, Ocasio-Cortez was an organizer for Bernie Sanders. So what is developing here, as you see it, as a political dynamic, and to what end will it come?
Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
Oh, good afternoon, Yatrisa.
Hello.
Well, I'm very excited about Ms. Ortiz, Ocasio-Cortez. I think she is a breath of fresh air that many of us have been waiting for. And I understand the previous caller's concern, but that it's going to be same old, but I seriously doubt that. I really see this as not just for New York, but across the country as the beginning of something very new and also very exciting. And one of the things I think with candidates such as this, when they are elected, if they can bring what I would call the old kitchen cabinet, sort of that they would, that JFK had when he came into the office. And these are people who are from his district or from the district that kind of keep them honest, you know, and keep them very updated in terms of what the people from their district really want and need. And so they don't get bought out by all the lobbyists and other special interests that are going to come at them. And so, of course, they're already plotting to come after Ms. Ortiz, I'm sure. But
Ortiz.
And I would hope that and she's a brilliant lady, very, very smart, clear, has smart people around her. And I'm sure they expect that. I'm sure that they already know that the DNC is going to be coming and trying to co-opt her and even to use her for their own doings and their own interests. But I doubt that's going to happen here.
Oh, so then you don't know politics, huh?
Actually, I do, and someone who
from a realistic history reference here, we know what the party is. It's half of the duopoly. We know how the Democratic Party has operated in the past. We know the sentiments within the party that it got hoodwinked. It feels used by Bernie Sanders, and
yep.
You know, it's the same feeling on Sanders' part that he had done enough and quite a bit for the Democratic Party. A new dynamic exists. We haven't seen how people yet are, you know, they're prognosticating about how the party as a party would behave toward this combo or potential combo of the Cortez and Sanders. So let's talk about that. You know how political parties behave. So let's try, what in your view is the most realistic likelihood about how things would play out? Would the party try to find a way, if not to co-opt the Cortez-Sanders duo, but to keep them as close as possible? The party has no, there will be no benefit to alienating them. And from Sanders' point of view, because he did it before and surprised us, just when he was at the peak of his political momentum outside of the Democratic Party, he totally capitulated. So is he likely to repeat that, or is he likely to try and see how a relationship with Cortez under the umbrella of democratic socialism, or is that too terrifying for the public? How is this going to work out?
Well, first of all, Ms. Cortez should keep herself as far away from Bernie Sanders as possible, in my belief. You have.
Why? I mean, she has nothing to gain, you think?
Nothing to gain and to keep away. You know, he's failed. He failed, as shown us repeatedly. He has failed his supporters, 13 million that supported him. And he totally capitulated to the DNC. He was in collusion with them, clearly. It was known even before when they installed Hillary. And now he's got a, you know, had his retreat up in Vermont somewhere, you know, for millions of dollars. He's a sellout. And so Ms. Cortez should definitely keep as far away from him as possible. She should create her own brand with her own following, and let this go viral nationally, even internationally.
If she does that, let me kind of poke at you a minute here.
Okay.
Even if she does that, she'll still be one.
Yes.
Of many. All right, she'll still be outside of a system, and she'll have to start from scratch. And she will not, more than likely, endear herself to the Democratic establishment, which could be very useful to her in specific situations where votes are being cast and, you know, people need help with all kinds of things,
sure,
assignment to committees, and, you know, the nuts and bolts of coming into Congress as a newbie.
That's right. So, I agree with you on that.
You say cut the ties from the start. Have nothing to do with the Democrats.
Well, I think that there are some benefits to certain folks in the DNC with some limits, and you have the so-called Black caucus, the so-called Hispanic caucus. Actually, I called my congressman today, Mr. Jeffries, and of course left a message because he never had anybody on the phone, and really just insisted that he start up articles of impeachment against Donald J. Trump, and wanting to get feedback in terms of why he hasn't. And that it's unacceptable for him and others to remain silent. And so for Ms. Cortez, I think that she will have to have some type of interaction with them, but on her condition, she is the star. And the others have, they've all failed us. And so it's going to take some work to protect her and to just keep those forces that are already salivating to use her in one way or another away from her, and you know, to keep her true to the people.
Aren't you being idealistic?
Very much so. Yes, very much so.
Why would you persist in being idealistic in a very realistic,
yes,
cutthroat political world?
Well, for one reason, significantly, I grew up on Capitol Hill. I grew up in the D.C., Maryland area, and I actually wanted to be a congressional page. For people who don't know what a page are, they're basically high school kids who work in the Senate and on the House of Representatives on the floor. I wasn't able to do that, but I actually ended up working in Senator Edward M. Kennedy's office as an intern in the mailroom. And so just being a very young person and being exposed to the grandeur and the aura and the power of the House and the Senate and the Congress, and knowing as an American, and I am African American, the value of those institutions and also the history of them, which wasn't always friendly to us and other people of color, I am a believer, and I am very idealistic. The Kennedys were very idealistic, so, you know, I have that kind of some rose-colored glasses from the Kennedy background, and seeing that they were definitely in many respects for the people, and so yes, I'm optimistic. But what other choice is there at this point? We must think boldly and out of the box. And when true leadership emerges, such as Ms. Ortiz, we must really look very closely and see how we can be supportive.
Okay. Well, this is fascinating. This is a fascinating discussion, and I'm delighted by it, because we're getting to the nuts and bolts and of how politics works, and the theoretical meeting with the practical and the real. This is fascinating, and you're dealing with it really, really well. Thank you so much for your contribution today. Sharif from Queens, how do you see it?
First of all, let me say good afternoon, and I sincerely hope your health continues to improve.
Okay. Thank you very much for your kind words.
You're very, very welcome. I had the occasion to meet this young lady. I didn't get a chance to talk with her, but we did make eye contact. I didn't have time to stay, but she was, how would you say it? She was in Queens, just trying to get a base together, And I like her program, and I tell you what I see in her. I see sincerity, and I see enthusiasm in what she is doing. And then I look at, just what she talking about fighting for, like expanding Medicaid for all. But I'm going to just say this. She's going to have some difficulties going in there with that party, because it need to be reformed, if not deconstructed. And the reason I say that is that with that superdelegate, they have so many different votes in there with that super thing. And that's not the will of the people. So they don't need to call themselves Democrats when they got one person like Hillary had been anointed. That is not what the people really wanted. And they went contrary to it. So why call yourself a Democratic Party when you're not? But I'm going to just say this, and this might be outside of the context of what you're saying. This country is in decay. And it's going to be these young people who are going to bring about these changes. And just like this, the guy we have in Washington, he has very poor judgment, so he's not anticipating the consequences of his actions and decisions before he make them. What he's doing, he's alienating a lot of so-called friendly countries, and that's going to wind up with that dollar depreciating. No one know when, but we know it's coming, because there's nothing behind that money, no gold. So,
well, we have seen also before some of the most improbable things actually happen. The election of Trump was exactly an example of that. Who saw him coming? But he's here. So given the scenario, just the theory of it, I wanted to give us an idea from your perspective of how these two entities, who have more in common than they do with the Democratic Party, at least theoretically, how will the party deal with them? We're getting some ideas so far from those who have spoken. And how will they deal with each other within the framework of the Democratic Party, if there is to be such an arrangement?
You mean the two talking about Bernie and the young lady?
Yes, and Ocasio-Cortez.
Ocasio-Cortez. Well, this being the difference, Utrice, Bernie is not all the way sincere, and he compromised on principles. This young lady, I hope she don't do that, but in her eyes, and I'm a psychotherapist, so one thing we do in our assessment, we look at the appearance and behavior. The eyes tell a great story, Not most people really look at them, but I do. What I saw in her was a great deal of enthusiasm, and I saw sincerity in what she stands for. And I'll just give you a very quick example. She talked about Medicare for all, federal job guarantee, reduce the prison population, expand Social Security, tuition-free college. She's going to meet some problems with those so-called Democrats. With her agenda, right? But she represents part of that change that's coming about. And it's coming. See, when that change comes, it comes at a time when no one is expected. And I think that
that very issue, that very thing is at the crux of what we're discussing. She is presenting to the party itself a reminder of what it said it was about and what it said it wanted to be years ago and hasn't been in a while.
That is
so
true.
There's going to be natural resistance to her, and she should expect it. She shouldn't expect a warm welcome at all. She is representing what the party has not been able to convince its base that it is about and it can accomplish. That's a natural scenario. But she has, at least arguably, she has, because she organized for Bernie Sanders, and we can't deny that it was a very impressive movement that achieved a great deal. I mean, we also have to recognize that, you know, we recognize that Bernie did not live up to his end of the bargain. But in this scenario, you can't go into Congress and be a one-person band. It doesn't work like that. You don't get anything accomplished. You have to forge alliances somehow to get your program through to some degree. So how do you see this happening where you have, on the one hand, two individuals, they're not Democrats, but they could at least have a working relationship, but they first have to establish a relationship with each other. And that alone also would cement a resistance to them from the Democratic establishment. So how do they get things done?
Well, it's going to take, it's not going to happen right away. It's going to take time. And as people see and are already beginning to see what the Democrats stand for, and this young lady coming in, her real support going to come from outside of that Democratic Party. And it's going to take time. Up the road, if she stayed true to her agenda and her principles, I can see her running for president. And a lot of people would back her, you know, not the Democratic Party. That's where her problems will come from. But I think if she go back to the grassroots people, the people out there are going to support her because they're hungry for change. Eutrice, I live in New York, Queens, right? I don't know how, and I'm a so-called professional. You know, I've been to school and I can pay my bills and all. The person without education, I don't see how they can live anymore. How can they afford a rent, not even to think about a mortgage? And this is not going to go on forever, Eutrice. These young people are going to change that. I predicted and I talked about it last week. I'm in the process or in the business of preparing these young people, and they're going to have the answers. See, if this crew had the answers, they'd already have implemented. They don't have it. It's in the young people. And the young people are going to...
She is in the belly of the beast right now.
True.
Having been elected, she still has to get things done. And you don't in Washington. You don't succeed as a lone wolf. You have to have some kind of network. You have to have some kind of system to deliver you from the, you know, what we expect would happen, which is that they would just politely shove her to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And you could be as brilliant as you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have a lot of support from the outside, but the outside is not what is legislating. The outside is not what is passing laws.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have some kind of working relationship within Congress, and that itself is a formidable undertaking to establish relationships that you could live with. I don't know how it's going to work, but I don't see, maybe it's happening and we just don't know, but I don't see an outreach or an indication that at least enough Democrats and even Sanders understand the benefits of establishing some kind of a working relationship. You don't have to like her. And she doesn't have to like them. The question is the practical matter of legislating. How are you going to get that done? Well, thank you so much, Sharif. Sorry, it sounded like you're finishing up.
Okay, I'll say this and I'll finish up. She'll make some compromises, which she'll have to do. Long as she don't compromise her principles, she's going to be okay. And believe me, that change is going to come. I hope you and I live around to see it, you know?
let's pray that will happen. Thank you so much for your contribution today. Well, we've come to the end of the program today. This is a conversation that needs to be extended, and we'll have to find a way to do that, which is easy to do. Tomorrow is your favorite holiday of the... I'm being so wicked. Tomorrow is the 4th of July, and I'm not going to be on air. Generally, on the 4th of July, I do what Frederick Douglass did and just get back to business on the 5th of July. So you will hear a repeat program tomorrow. Hopefully you would find some use in it. And then we return to each other again on Friday. But this conversation, whether it continues on Friday or the following week, it must continue. It will continue. Because it is a level of, to me, this is me, what we had today in this short time was that we had people thinking about things. And this is the fundamental fear of all political leaders, that there are people thinking out there. So we must do everything possible to frustrate them and continue the discussion, continue doing the thinking. And I am just so impressed with the depth of analysis that people have. And we can teach each other so much if we only had the time to, you know, give each other access to our respective brains. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crowe. And we, again, won't see each other tomorrow, but certainly we'll continue the discussion on Friday. Bye-bye.